name is Katie Lewis. I'm an assistant professor at Texas A&M AgriLife Research in Lubbock and Texas Tech University in the Department of Plant and Soil Science. Today I'll be discussing with you the completion of a three-year project looking at different varieties, irrigation levels, and in different conservation practices. I would like to give credit to my co-authors, Joseph Burke, one of my graduate students, who has been vital in some of the soil analyses that we've ran, as well as Wayne Keeling and Terry Wheeler, who are two of my colleagues at Texas A&M AgriLife in Lubbock. All right, so a little bit about the Texas Southern High Plains. I grew up in South Texas, and I thought that I was relatively familiar with farming operations, farming practices. And then I moved to Lubbock in 2014 and realized that there was still much to be learned. There are more acres of cotton planted in the Southern High Plains compared to most other crops. In 2015, there was about 3 million acres of land planted to cotton. Yield was right around 3.8 million bales. What makes this slightly difficult is that we are a semi-arid environment. And so anywhere from 40 to 50% of our acres are going to be under irrigation. We have inherently low soil organic carbon levels, and this makes the wind erosion a high possibility, especially in those months of March, April, and May, which falls right around the time that we're planting cotton. So very large threat of having some sand damage to those young cotton seedlings. So just like any other place, there are farmers that are practicing different management strategies, looking at crop rotation, cover cropping, reduced tillage, of course, and we're going to see those same benefits that we would most other places. And because of the cotton that's planted across that part of the region, there is some wheat that's planted. We do have, like I said, the potential for soil erosion, that sand to blow. But keep in mind, farmers are always, their first priority is to keep that topsoil in place. And so if they can implement some of these conservation practices, that would reduce some of the trips that they have to make across the field when it comes to sand fighting and keeping the soil in place. So their number one priority in most cases is to reduce soil erosion. With the soil health initiative and then some of the cost share incentives and programs that USDA NRCS offers, there has been quite a bit of interest in cover crops that's really been sparked within probably the past 3 years. I would say that every couple of weeks I hear from somebody that's considering starting some cover crop work in our area. They really are promoted to build soil health and also build or increase carbon inputs and carbon storage. However, in our part of Texas, there are mixed reports. So Wayne Keeling, who is one of the co-authors on this, did some work back in his early career looking at different cover crops, and since then there's just been mixed reports. No, not much consistency to what we're seeing. However, if we consider wheat and rye to be two cover crops, those are commonly planted over the winter to hold that soil in place. Soil moisture, though, is one of our major concerns. Because we are a semi-arid environment, our groundwater resources are dwindling, Ogallala aquifer levels are getting lower. We have to be aware of what we're doing to our soil moisture. And so in this case, can we use a rotation, so something like cotton, wheat, fallow versus a cover crop, and see some of those same benefits and also conserve some of our soil moisture? And guys are doing this. They're not necessarily doing it with the number one priority of enhancing their soil health. They're doing it maybe because they don't have enough water. So they're implementing rotations. I like this picture. It's taken from an airplane, but you can see that there are quite a few pivots that are broken in half. Half will be planted to cotton, and then the other half maybe to wheat. And so they'll start this rotation. And most often, it is because they are running out of water, and this is a way for them to conserve that. And so one of the questions that we have is, how does this rotation compare to continuous cotton, where you won't have as much water? Can you increase yields enough to where it balances out. So the research that I'm going to be discussing with you today is looking at quantifying the impact of a crop rotation versus a rye cover in a continuous cotton system, looking at not just soil quality and lint yield, but also some other parameters, including root knot nematode populations. So our systems were initiated in 2014. They are no tillage. We have a continuous cotton with rye cover. The cotton's planted early May, harvested most years in November, but as I'm presenting now, they're actually harvesting this trial. Then the rye is seeded sometime soon after harvesting cotton, and then it's chemically terminated in mid-March prior to planting cotton again. Then we have our wheat cotton rotation. There's going to be a fallow period in the system following wheat harvest and then until cotton's planted that following year in May. Then we have three different irrigation levels. There's a base, which is estimated to be around 60% AT, but really it's what the capacity of those wells are. And then our low is going to be 33% lower than what we're applying with the base, and then the high is going to be 33% greater. And you can see at this table here, which has the amount of irrigation water that's applied pre-plant as well as in season and the totals. And on average, it's somewhere around that 200, or ranges from about 100 to 200, depending on what our rainfall is that year. In 2015, we had quite a bit of rainfall, especially early in the growing season, and so there was less irrigation that was applied pre-plant prior to planting cotton. And then 2014 was a bit drier, and 2016 was right at average. This is that system where we have continuous cotton with a rye cover, and then we have our cotton wheat rotation here. There is a continuous cotton that's conventional tillage, no cover, winter fallow, that we've just recently added into the system after that third year. So what are we looking at? We're looking at cotton yield, the loan values, and then the gross revenue from that system. Also measuring root knot nematode, galling early season, as well as the fall soil density. And looking at from the soil standpoint, soil organic carbon, aggregate formation, and inorganic nitrogen, so nitrate and ammonium, at four different depths, 0 to 15, 15 to 30, 30 to 60, and 60 to 120 centimeters. So let's start off with cotton yield. This is combined across 2014 to 2016. On the y-axis, we have lint yield in kilograms per hectare. And then on the x-axis, we have our three different irrigation levels going from low to high. The green bars are going to be our continuous cotton with rye cover. The maroon bars are the wheat cotton rotation. And for each of the three irrigation levels, the wheat cotton rotation yielded more than what the continuous cotton rye cover did. And what I think is really interesting, not just to look at the differences, but to look at where differences did not exist. So if we look in the wheat cotton rotation under a base irrigation, there's no difference between the yield under high irrigation and the continuous cotton rye cover. Now looking at revenue, which is calculated based on the loan value of that cotton, and very similar results here, other than within an irrigation level, we didn't see any differences between those systems. But the same is true if we compare the wheat cotton rotation under base and the continuous cotton rye cover under the high. So you're getting just as much benefit with that rotation under the base irrigation as you would with continuous cotton under the high irrigation. When we calculate irrigation water use efficiency, which is the yield under irrigated systems minus that in the dry land, divided by how much irrigation water we applied across the growing season, so this total amount here at the bottom. There were no differences in 2014. This data is slightly different. We weren't able to combine across years because of the differences we saw in rainfall. So in 2014, we had 250 millimeters of rainfall during the growing season. 2015, 627 millimeters, so well above our average. And then in 2016, it was an average year for us, about 430 millimeters of rainfall. So if we look at 2015, there's differences within each one of those irrigation levels, especially at the low. We really increased our use efficiency with the wheat cotton rotation compared to the continuous cotton with rye cover. And the same is also true for 2016. We're getting greater efficiency where we have that rotation in place compared to the continuous cotton. One of the reasons for that we have discovered may go back to the effects of these systems on root knot nematode populations. So same figures here, same formatting where we have the continuous cotton as the green bars and the wheat cotton rotation in the maroon. The bigger the bars here are, the worse it is. So we have on the left the galls per root system. This data is collected early on, June, July, after the cotton's established, but they're on younger plants and it's counting the number of galls per root system. So with that continuous cotton rye cover, we get greater galling compared to the wheat cotton rotation. And the same thing for the nematode density later in the growing season. So they'll be taking samples, or they should have taken samples sometime in September, October, and looking at the density of the nematodes. Same results here. Now moving on to some of the soil data. So these samples were collected in April of 2017. You can see that there's a few more treatments here than what I've discussed in the past. Remember, we have the two different parts of that rotation. So that is the red line as well as the green line. Each represents a different stage of that rotation. Then we have a continuous cotton, which is conventional tillage, and continuous cotton with the rye cover, no-till, is that purple line. And consistently, under high irrigation, we see an increase in soil organic carbon, especially at the 0 to 15 and 30 to 60 centimeter depths with the continuous cotton rye cover. Very similar results in the low irrigation, but we did see some differences in that upper depth of the soil, whereas we didn't with the high irrigation. So what's important here is that we commonly hear that organic carbon can be a good indicator of soil health, and I believe that is true in some systems. However, this is not the only time that we've measured an increase in organic carbon, but we don't see that reflected in our yields, and that's exactly the case here. When we look at the system as a whole, we are seeing an increase in lint yields with the rotation versus the continuous cotton. And as I discussed, some of those reasons may be due to the pathogens. Maybe water availability, I'm sure, plays a big part in that. Having that system sit fallow over several months not only has an impact on the nematode population, but also gives the soil a chance to replenish any soil moisture that was used by the wheat crop. And then also possibly nutrients as well. I heard a talk earlier today where they were looking at cover crops. They weren't comparing that to a rotation of any sort, but they were also seeing a reduction in yield of the crop that they were using in their study. And one of the explanations that they had was immobilization of nitrogen, possibly phosphorus as well. And that may be the case here, where we have that wheat sitting over 6-7 months before we come back in and plant cotton. That gives a chance for that material, for that residue to break down, and possibly immobilization not being as great at that point whenever we plant cotton. And as I mentioned, organic carbon we have seen an increase even over that short time period in a sandy soil, which is definitely a benefit, but when it comes to yield, we don't see that relationship, at least a positive direct relationship there. We're seeing the increase in yield with the rotation, not the continuous cotton. So overall, I think that soil health promoting practices definitely need to be regionally focused. What works in other parts of the U.S. may not work in our area of Texas. Even our area of Texas may be slightly different than other regions. With that, I will finish up and take any questions that you might have. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Are you guys tracking soil water?
We have not started that yet. I'm hoping to include that in this next system when we have the actual continuous cotton with conventional tillage included as one of the treatments.
I'm just looking curious, your part of the world, you know, that fallow period you have, when you harvest a cotton plant, what the fallow efficiency would actually look like?
Yeah. No, that's something we plan to include. Yes, sir.
How do the economics stack up on oil and cotton, even though you're getting much more yield? Is the farmer fracturing that?
They are, and the economics is, once again, something we're working with economists now to start looking at the big picture and see how your net profit looks with these two different systems. Because I know just by looking at revenue, you're not going to see the big picture. So with the completion of that third year, we're going to start looking at the farm scale economics of this. Yes, sir. So it is, it is replicated three times. Because of its large plot, four rows, anywhere from 300 up to 700 feet long plots, but the same amount of area is harvested each year for yields. It's difficult because it is large plot to have truly replicated systems, and so including the system as a nested factor is how some of these stats were done, because of the, it's not easy to replicate quadrants of pivots like this, but it, there are three replicates of each of those combinations or interactions. Yes, so this started in 2014. The soil data that I presented was from 2017 after a full 3 years, and both the cotton and wheat are represented each year, each individual year. Yeah. Thank you.